for the players.
Oh no, I've missed my sound cue because my screen's got all weird. I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast. Over 50 years of playing PlayStation and, like, I don't know, a lot more years playing PlayStation. And that games media combined. Thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can. Come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist. We can watch the short this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. And if you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review, which is on YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe, with comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. Saying that, though, for those that have kindly supported us financially in the past, big thank you, always. I have... As you can see, as you can hear, things have gotten a little bit better on the audio side. After a couple of weeks without having a mixing desk actively preventing me from using these incredible Audio-Technica AT2020 XLR microphones, I was able to go pick up a new mixing desk. So, Max, you and I were chatting about this for a while. Like, I was looking at the Yamaha ZZG. I was looking at the Elgato Wave Maduhika. There was another one. Oh, the Audio-Technica UX75, whatever it is. I ended up going with the returning to Behringer. They've been my staple. I've had, like, the old mixer I had for like 10 years, longer even. But this one is a smaller version. It is the Behringer Zenix 802S. So it's a USB mixing desk, only two XLR panels compared to four. I don't need four anymore. Two is more than sufficient. Compact. It works. It's got better gear in it. Turns out waiting 11 years to buy things does work in your favor. So hopefully it sounds better. Is it sounding better than the headset? That is a nod.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. But yeah, so yeah, of course, as I mentioned, big thank you to everyone that does financially contribute to the show in any capacity. As I know, we've been doing this for the better part of like over a decade now. And I'm very aware that we peaked like 7 years ago and we're just absolutely cruising ever since. But there are still people that do support us, that do come through. And the Patreon, now all I can hope is that they haven't realized they're still putting money into our Patreon. But big thank you to everyone because it has allowed me to be able to afford this mixing desk. And continue to do what we do, ideally sounding better than what we could do. Saying that though, just a moment ago before we went live, I was like absolutely bitching and whinging about the, about the price of WWE Perth, right? So as we all know, I am a big fan of professional wrestling, of the WWE. They are returning in October over PAX weekend, which I will not be able to go. Ideally be going over to Perth. Ticket prices came out today, Max. They're a bit fucked. Now, I sent them through to you as a non-wrestling fan. How does it feel?
PAX is looking pretty good now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, fuck yeah, it does. So, yeah, they dropped the pre-sale tickets for all three of them. So you get Raw, SmackDown, and the pay-per-view, which is cool. I believe this is the first time that Raw or SmackDown has ever been recorded in Australia. So for that reason alone, I'd love to go. However, it is so unimaginably expensive that if it wasn't for my good friends over at Down Under the Ring, check them out. It's a podcast I'm a part of outside of this one where I talk the wrestles. I probably wouldn't be able to go.
But is this per show?
No, or is this three because they're all in the same arena. So I think you kind of just get one ticket.
So this is for the Picard. So it's $5,500 for three shows, not each show making it $1,500.
Correct.
$15,000. Okay. Yeah.
Because that was my first response as well. I'm like, $5,000 for a ticket? Get fucked. But if you could pay, like, granted, I don't have $5,000 to spend on tickets, but you can get a pretty decent seat, like, for all three shows for, like, $5,000. Where I think Elimination Chamber last year was $10,000 ringside, I believe. Like, it was a bit fucked.
So, again, why don't you just pay the $332 for the three shows and just watch it on the big screen? Because unless you're sitting front row, you're watching that screen regardless.
Oh, yeah, look, I can confirm, having been to these shows, like, there's some times where you do look at the screen. I try to look at the ring, mostly because I've conditioned myself to do so from all indie shows and whatnot. But, yeah, you do. You will often, like, find yourself looking up and going, oh, what am I looking at the fucking screen for? I paid hundreds of dollars to be here. However,
because you want,
the
atmosphere...
You want to
watch wrestling, not fucking ants.
True. But look, as I said, I'm also very spoiled because of the nature of my time in wrestling. Like, I'm at the commentary table, so I'm as close as I can be. So I'm used to seeing it, like, here. So I'm very much one of those elitists for seats where possible. But, yeah, I don't have that kind of money.
Wallet isn't.
Huh?
You might be an elitist for seats, but your wallet isn't.
My wallet is absolutely not. Not even, like, the slightest. It's the same as, like, my desire, my heart sings for really good video game-like experiences, right? You know, this week we've been playing Death Stranding 2, which we'll talk about shortly. You know, and obviously it looks immaculate, but we'll touch upon that. I'm sitting thinking to myself, wouldn't this just be even better on a PS5 Pro? And then I remembered that I don't have fucking PS5 Pro money either, because that shit's expensive and it hasn't gone down at all. I actually went to EB Games the other day just to have a look. Maybe they've got pre-owned ones. Turns out they don't. And even if they did, it's still like $1,200. Actually, no, I think it's like $1,000 closer rather than $1,200. Either way, that is an ungodly amount of money for a console. Shit's expensive overall, Max. What's happened? It's almost like we've had some sort of global pandemic that really fucked everything, and then capitalism continues to be shit and just consume everything. And even though all the supply chains and all these things have been corrected, and you know they're no longer the big concern they once were, apparently the cost of everything is just get fucked, I guess. Because you made a fair example. Like, when you looked at those prices for the shows, you're like, these are mortgage payments.
Yeah, so I look at everything now. I'm just like, ah, it's like 2 months of my house.
With that in mind, is there anything that would like you could go over that line and be like, you know, I could do that?
That's for 5,000. I think I spent less than that going to Japan and back and staying for accommodation for 11 days and spending money.
Oh, I'm confident you did, because the yen is garbage right now.
I went to an entire other country. For what you're going to do in what is 3 days. And that you could do from the comfort of your own home naked.
You keep highlighting the naked part. And that is how I've watched wrestling up until this time.
I think you're missing out.
It's true. Normally, like, I view it with other substances in my system. But, like, yeah, normally they make you just want to chill and become couch. You don't really want to get you... bang on, I suppose. But
I mean, well, depending on the substance, it might be easier to get into your system if you were unclothed.
Just absorb it. But look, it is true. The yen is fucking poo.
Who needs edibles when you have suppositories?
I don't know if you could just thin in there and have a drag up your butt and go straight in. It's like a reverse fart. And then the tough part is then, you know, the puff, puff, pass process. Pass it down, then pass it down. That's gross. That was fun.
It's human to be that.
Well, outside of that disgusting visual, how you been, man?
Yeah, not too bad.
Anything going on?
I had to do a language literacy and numeracy test for my own.
Oh,
yeah. Friday morning, it was fun.
Have we discussed your
I haven't got results yet.
No, have we discussed your future plans on the show before? Like going back
to school? No, because it happened last week and we obviously didn't record. But yeah, spoilers, I'm going back to school.
Not like high school, by the way, which is...
I wish.
Man, because you know how like... side tangent and we'll come back. You know how like my day job's now at schools? So the other day, Phoebe had to put her car in for a service. And she goes, yeah. It's all right. What we'll do is I'll drop you off at school first. And then, you know, we'll go here. We'll drop the car off. We'll drive you to school and I'll come pick you up at the end of the day. And then we'll go get the car. I'm like, cool. Can you not refer to it as drop me off at school? Because I have a fucking job. It just happens to be in the school. And I did feel very infantilized for just a moment. And then I was funny. So it was okay. But unlike you, who is actually going back to school.
Yeah. So I'm obliged to go back to Victoria University. And I'm going to do some IT stuff and some cybersecurity stuff.
Not a bad thing. Cybersecurity is very important. Thank you, Optus.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I got fucking dicked on by that.
Mute in the chat goes, but did she take you to McDonald's and a Happy Meal afterwards? No, that only happens at the end of term. And that is this week.
Only that, in Victoria. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. Queensland are already on holidays.
And, in the US, I'm pretty sure they're on winter break right now. Makes sense.
Oh, yeah, but isn't like 3/4 of the year just like a bullshit long holiday?
Yeah. I think they don't have like term breaks like we do.
No.
It, you know, a complete side tangent again, by the way. Oh, summer break because it's winter here. That's a good point. It is fucking bizarre how like we here in Australia, in the Southern Hemisphere, we have our school year is the calendar year. It's awesome. The idea that, like, think about Harry Potter as example as well. Like, they start school in September. That's fucked. That's dumb. Start in the beginning of the year. It's a calendar year. It makes sense.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. We have a fucking fiscal year that runs from mid-year to mid-year.
Oh, don't get me started on the fucking financial years that start in March for some reason. It makes no fucking sense. Start in the middle of the year. It's easy. Nah, start in March for no reason. Fucking... confusing. But so, yeah, so how did your literacy test go?
So they don't actually give you any feedback outside of you tested at this number level, and they don't tell you what that number level is on a scale.
What was this? What was the number?
So, number 5. I tested a level 5 for reading, writing, and...
Oh, I'd say that's high.
So I'm assuming either 5's the top or I'm dumb as fuck.
I would say you are dumb as fuck because... If we remember from like NAPLAN, right, they're like, it's level, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5 just means you're a functioning human, I assume, for your age.
Sure. But yeah, I have no idea.
Did you blitz it? But did it feel easy?
I'm pretty sure I nailed it. There are a few things that I'm like, oh, how do I even do this again? And then I'm like sitting there with a pen and paper.
What were some example questions to see whether I am a level 5 or not?
I'm concreting pavement around a circular pool that's okay. At a depth of 50 mil. How much bags of concrete do I need for the amount of area that I need to cover? So you have to work out
the area from the square.
It gives you the dimension of the inner circle and not the outer circle. Then you have to try and extrapolate out what the outer circle is. And then you have to do all this other bullshit. And then you have to times it by the depth of how thick they wanted the
cool
the thing.
Well, that I'm glad they did that in your fucking IT course.
And then they're like, "Here, have a what was the other one? I sent it to Mum."
You said there was like some fuck off math equation that you had to solve.
I'm like
quadratic formula nonsense.
It's too early for this bullshit.
And where's that?
What is the value of y in the formula shown when x equals 4 over 5? And it's just like, y equals 4 over x plus the square root of x plus 0.2 minus 5x. I'm like, what?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fuck that shit.
Well, I'm just sitting there with a piece of paper.
Like, don't get me wrong. Part of me would really get a kick out of, like, trying to do that again. But then at the same time, fuck all that noise.
And then it gave me a really easy one. It's like, it gave me like just a right angle trial. And it's like, oh, can you tell me what the fucking, how big this line is? And I'm like, oh, what's that rule for triangles again? Is it like a squared plus something squared equals something else? Something? Just
like, are you telling me that you seriously couldn't remember the Pythagoras theorem?
Try to remember like 9th grade math.
But because like Einstein's theory of relativity. Is there a theory of relativity? E equals MC squared, right? They are the two things that get pulled out when anyone's ever trying to sound smart and pretend they remember things. Go, oh, well, if E equals MC squared, I'm like, shut up. Shut the fuck up.
I remembered area of circle pretty easy. It's pi r squared. So
I was going, yeah, I was trying to remember earlier, like a equals pi r squared, but I'm like, what was it, 2 pi r?
No, that's the diameter. That's something different. Yeah.
Either way, there you go. Well, I'm glad you're a minimum level intelligence, Max, at least, because they gave you no rankings. So we assume that you
passed. And then one of them was like, for the English one, they just gave me a fucking sentence with no punctuation. They're just like, punctuate this sentence. And I'm like, okay. And this, I'm like, do I put in the Oxford comma or do I leave the Oxford comma
I'm
off?
A firm believer in the Oxford comma. I would have given you extra marks had you put the Oxford comma in.
I am also a firm believer in the Oxford comma.
Man, the amount of times that I see, because people don't understand. If it's something, comma, something, and something, those two are lumped together. Unless you add that comma and something, then they are separate. It's pretty fucking important. I am not very good at the English, but there are certain rules that are fundamentally important. The Oxford comma is one of them.
So yeah, I did that Friday morning, so hopefully I'll know.
Sorry,
by the end of the week.
Sorry, I heated about the Oxford comma, my apologies. So you did that Friday morning, was it?
Yeah, because classes start at the end of July, so.
Oh, you got a whole month.
Yeah.
So is this your winter break then before you head into school? What are you going to do? You're going to play games every day? You're going to hang out about?
My Rumspringer.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Am I going to hang out and play games every day? No, my children are about to be on fucking school holidays.
Not sure. Well, you now get to think about it. Like, this is our school holidays now. Let's go do cool shit. Let's go roll down the hill on like grass, ride bikes, play jacks and marbles in the street.
It's fucking snowing outside. In what universe am I going out?
I don't know. I don't have school holidays anymore. I haven't had school holidays in years. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't fucking go outside. It's cold as hell. We have really artificially extended the length of this episode already, but I'm genuinely impressed by your, quite taken aback by your aptitude test.
My nonchalance. Yeah, I mean...
Oh, and because the whole time, right, you been, man, I should probably get some fucking Ritalin for this shit. And I was like, well, come get some. You forgot to do that, which is ADHD as hell.
I didn't forget. It was just like there was no convenient time.
Mute in the chat who's in the United States of America. It says it's blazing here. I'm very curious on what your definition of blazing is compared to an Australian summer. We'll get to that in just a moment. Max...
Like 73 degrees, because yeah, they use the Fahrenheit, not the clitoris. I mean, the Celsius.
Shit. My week, no aptitude test on my part. I went to we went to a Chuka at the beginning of the beginning of last week, which is why we didn't record last week. Went there up for the night. That was pretty cool.
I don't know your numbers, Puck.
We need a conversion, because 73, that sounds like a fire.
Yeah, 73 is we're dead.
Yeah, we're all dead. Many of us. All living things. The ground at which we stand is charcoal. Potentially. 73 in Fahrenheit is room temp. What the fuck room temp is that? In Australia, our room temp can vary.
Apparently my room temp is like 6.
Yeah, I think mine's 21. Right at this very moment. It's around 25, it's room temp. Yeah, so I did that. That was pretty cool. Just pretty chill week nonetheless. But we were very lucky as we get into the section about what have we been playing. Because this week, Max, you and I, thank you to the team over at PlayStation Australia, have been playing Death Stranding 2. Now, preface this for everyone at home. Max, very deep into the game. Myself, not that much. I'm probably pushing 10-ish hours at this point. Max, substantially more. What's your number count at the moment?
Like 28.
So he's like double me in a bit, right? But you are a lot further along in the story as well, because I am just absolutely enjoying this game to its complete breadth, which means I'm getting all the things, picking up the spare packages. I'm ensuring they get to where they need to be. Because I would like... I want those 5-star ratings, right? I want the cool shit that they can give me. So for this conversation, we're going to keep it pretty surface level. No major story beats, probably talk about our experience and our feels and the controls. However, I would like to, at a later date, do a full-blown review conversation where we will dive into spoilers, into all of it, because both Max and I utterly adored Death Stranding 1, and we are both already adoring Death Stranding 2, and with the amount of emotional gut punches that Max has mentioned, he hasn't told me what yet, I imagine we'll have a lot to say about this game at large. But
I just want to quickly cut you off and point out that Puck in the chat, 73 is 22 in Kangi units. You guys are the only people that use the fucked up units.
Yeah, but
like everyone else uses.
And look, once again, if you want to talk about Death Stranding, right? Like, they're going to start using them Kangi units. You know what I'm saying? Because as we now know, and it's been pretty openly expressed,
freedom units
in Death Stranding 2, we make our way to Down Under. But Max, as we always do when we do our little reviews, I send it through to you because for some reason you can coherently package up the game a bit better than I can.
I feel like you should do it because you're closer to the start to me. It's more fresh in your mind. I can work with that. My head's been Kojima fucked.
All right. Saying that though, as I mentioned, big thank you to the team over PlayStation Australia providing us the review code for Death Stranding 2 on the beach. Let's get into it. Now, once again, surface level chats. Death Stranding 2 on the Beach is a sequel to the 2019 original release Death Stranding by Kojima Productions, written, directed, and pretty much conceived by Hideo Kojima, best known for his experience on Zone of the Enders, as well as PT that never came to fruition, and of course, the Metal Gear Solid franchise. Death Stranding 2 on the Beach takes place 11 months after the close of the first title. We see Lou and Sam Porter Bridges hanging out in their post-Death Stranding life, and that is all you get. Because I feel like, apart from major story beats of, hey, you need to now go reconnect the world, so first we just send you to Mexico, then we've got to send you to Australia, that's about as far as I've gotten, and I'm not going to say any more outside of, like, I guess, the world, the experience. Because with this game being so heavily story-focused, until we get our full review chat, I don't really want to go much deeper than that. Max, do you want me to start, or in terms of like my initial impressions?
You start, and I'll just add on.
Beautiful. All right, so first of all, I am playing this on a standard PS5, as is Max. Neither of us have PS5 Pros, so we cannot speak to how good it looks or how good it plays on those other consoles. However, I can comfortably say that for somehow, Kojima has been able to deliver such a visually remarkable game that has been able to deliver a sense of scope and scale way more than I could have envisioned. Now, many of you may have seen this across social medias. The beginning of the game, you start, you know, there's a sort of a premise that kind of goes, hey, this is everything you need to know about Death Stranding 1, and holy shit, can you cut that game down really quickly when you need to.
It does skip a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it skips so much, because like, here are the main beats, here's everything you need to know to start playing the game. We'll fill the rest in later. So it does this kind of like panning shot of various locations, and dear God, I am confident that they have to be real photos with doctored in Death Stranding shit, because some of those shots are so immaculate that they cannot be created in a game engine. They're ridiculous. But at the end of that sequence, after a really cool, very similar to the opening of Death Stranding 1, as you listen to that, was that Low Roar, which is the band, which I believe the singer has passed since releases. And as it kind of builds you up and sets this scene, not the band isn't Low Roar, it just sets the similar feeling. Follows up with like a sort of a crane shot that kind of comes in, pans around, and we get to see Sam Porter Bridges, once again played by Norman Reedus, as he's going to have a bit of a snooze on a hill. Little baby hands come up, tickle his cheek. It's Lou. It's lovely. He stands up, camera pulls back, and in very similar to Uncharted 4 Among Thieves, there's that shot where you go, oh, wait, am I fucking controlling this? No. Because what a feeling. Because you're top of this, you're top of this canyon, you look over, you're seeing every bit of part of it, you're seeing a big city in the distance, everything is lit wonderfully, it's a big bright blue sky day. And the game just says, go. Now, granted, it does have a very funneled path in front of you as you walk along the sort of tip of a sand dune. And the only way I think about this, Max, this opening scene, it has to be some trickery, right? Because granted, you know, you can climb everything that you can see, but there is no way they can render that far. They have to be able to, it must essentially be like a plate. And the only thing that renders is the road in front of you, and everything else has to be a plate. And then as you move, it knows where you're going and can render the difference. Because that opening scene is fucked. It's fucked. And as you're walking, you know, the credits are flashing up. So it's this big interactive credit scene. There's a press R3 for an aerial shot. Does this big pull out. And you look tiny on the scale of this world. And to me, that immediately set the scene of what Death Stranding was going to be. Because as we're now in like the southern part of you know, America, what used to be America, now the United Cities of America, we're right on that cusp between that border into Mexico. And then as we go over to Mexico, we see a whole different world again. And like, I'm not intentionally talking the game experience, right? I'm not any story beats or anything at the moment. Go to Mexico. Kind of feels like an extension of where you were, a lot of sand. Thankfully, they didn't put that sepia filter that they always put over shows in order to make you go, hey, you're just so you know, you're in Mexico or some Arabic country because the screen's a bit more yellow than usual. They didn't do that, thankfully. But when they go to Australia, once again, I'm only early days, probably only a couple of hours into the Australia part of the game. But a lot of the world feels like Australia. The greens are right, the rocks are right, the trees feel right, the colouring is all bang on. The world's gone to shit, very similar to Australia. You know, once again, we have the most dangerous creatures, you know, known to man into one continent. Turns out the world, like our actual fucking environment's hot shit too. Accents are really good. Like I was explaining this to Phoebe and to Craig. The actors that they have chosen to use, to me, whether it be the juxtaposition of having a bunch of, you know, American accented individuals in the game and then to have the Australian folk, I feel that they have intentionally chosen older Australians, right? People, so there's a particular energy, a particular warmth that comes from 80s and 90s Australiana. It's how we speak. It's the language that we use. Like, it's not a throwback to the 1960s. That's right. Oh, we'll talk about this. You know, that was when we were super influenced by the United Kingdom. And for whatever reason, that was the voice we all people used when they presented shit. But they're not. It's not so new that it's super Americanized. Like, there is this warm heart feeling that when I hear these voices. Now, they're like, they haven't cranked it to the like stereotype of like, gee, you know, Digger and all these other fucking Australian colloquialisms. Like, they've kept it pretty down the line. It's talking like you and I are right now. Now, granted, yeah. I think the Australian accents in the game are better than mine, that's for sure. Like, because mine's hot mess, and mine's got little Canadian influences in there, in here, there, and everywhere. So it's not like a full-blown Australian accent. But it must be bizarre for other places to experience it, because, like, granted, we are Australian and our experience within this game is going to be greatly impacted by being Australian. Like, it completely changes it for me. It feels so warmly in home, and I'm wanting to connect all these places because it feels like I'm reconnecting my country. Like, I'm not a patriotic man by any stretch, but being able to do it here is really, really cool. Now, granted, like, we have not seen any like kangaroos, like, cause there's really no animals in the world, you know. But the terrain feels fun and cool. Like, I'm in the Western Australia at the moment. That's where you come, that's where you enter. Haven't gone around to the East Coast known to be more luscious and green and vibrant. I'm hoping to see that in time. It's not as it's fucked overall.
That's all right.
Sweet. You know, the rainforests of like, say, the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. Because granted, they take America and cut it down to like six cities. Australia, they seem to have done the same. Like, you're not actively traversing Australia because you'd be playing the game for fucking years before you could walk from one side to the other. but it does well, I think, feel great.
Because when you save it, it gives you like a a little checklist of like distance traveled, how much cargo you've carried. And I think I've just clocked 100 kilometers and I've been fucking all around Australia.
Yeah, I can assure you that there's more than that.
Yeah, it's 100 k's from me to the next CBD.
yeah, that's it. From here to Melbourne is 100 k's. Yeah, so from a world experience, I'm loving it. They are adding from that, they are adding a lot more to the world of Death Stranding in terms of a lot of the actions that we have done in Death Stranding 1 are leading into here, like even something as simple as reconnecting the United Cities of America or the chiral elevation, because you know we know of Kyrellium, which is the element that is from the beach. From the other side, so that has even though we've connected using this chiral network or essentially the internet, it is having an impact on the world around us outside of America. Hence, why we're now going to ideally reconnect the world and establish this larger internet, so everyone can say racist shit to one another on the internet once again. I'm sure they can't wait. From a character side, like Norman Reedus looks fucking insane. Like, he looks like shit in general. Just putting it out there, he looks like shit. Their ability to capture his looking like shit with motion capture is insane. He's bang on. He looks exactly like shit. Like, oh, you look like shit. Like, that's just Norman Reedus. Yeah, so the character models are fantastic. It looks incredible. I've not had any glitches or any, like, performance issues. I have seen there was a little bit of pop in that opening sequence, but you know we played a day before early access, I believe. So I'm sure that's been rectified. There's been a couple updates since. From a gameplay, there's a lot of quality of life improvements that I found, like taking being able to take off your backpack. Now, whether you could do that in the first or not, I can't remember. But I just never did it. Something I didn't do in Death Stranding 2, I planned my route because I find the terrain to be a lot more fucked than 1, where 1 I'd be like, I'm sure I can just wing it from there to there. It's either going to be flat or hill or whatever.
In 1, I would literally go from point A to point B and just like, I'll just use this as a guide. And if I have to go around shit, I go around shit.
But we're here, I feel like I 100% need to. Otherwise, I'm going to get fucked. Like, immediately. Outside of that, like, I don't know what other beats that there are for me to discuss, but I'll pass it to you, Max. We'll go on your thoughts, and I'm sure you'll invoke something within me.
So I agree pretty much with everything you said. The game looks stunning. The quality of life improvements are nice. The game is a little bit more combat heavy than what the first one was. They've really embraced that. They've made it more.
Well, they did that with the director's cut, so for those playing at home, obviously released on PS4. PS5, they re-released it, called the Director's Cut, added a bunch of additional content, but they really focused quite heavily on combat in the Director's Cut update. So you could pretty much play the first game without fucking with anyone, where now, from the Director's Cut onwards, it does feel a little bit more required in some spaces.
You'll get to a point in the game where you are given a special code that you can input and it will give you live ammunition as opposed to rubber bullets. And then you have to deal with the dead bodies because you can't just leave dead bodies around because they trigger void outs, similar to the first game. So you got to go fucking deal with that problem. So just don't...
Don't kill them.
Just don't do that. But yeah, I'm having a blast. I find that a lot of my combat interactions are exactly the same. So essentially, in the first game, you got rope, and I used to just kind of sneak up on everyone, rope them, hit them in the back, knock them out. In this, I can shoot rope out of a gun.
Oh, no, you can do that in the first as well. That was an update in the director's cut, the bolo gun, if I remember.
Yeah, so I just run around bolo gunning people and then just kicking them in the face to knock them on the ground.
Yeah.
I'll just trip them over and then just run up and just go...
Speaking of kicking in faces, though, like, one of my favorite things about combat is you get spotted, you press L3, and I just start fucking gunning. Did you ever see the movie, what was it? Not Nope, but one before that?
Nope.
There's that movie when that guy is just running directly at the camera, and the last minute he pivots. I think it was like Us or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Get
yeah.
Out. It was Get Out. Thank you, Park. The Key and Peele.
Key and Peele.
Jordan yeah. Peele's movie, which coincidentally he's got doing something with Hideo. Whenever I get caught, I just fucking gun it and then jump and just fly kick these motherfuckers. Like the overpoweredness of being able to jump and just cross body someone or just run and kick him in the face is the best.
Because of the new like tech tree system.
Yeah, there's a tech tree in this game now.
There's a tech tree. I'm specced out for combat. So if I get spotted, I automatically aim at the person who spotted me.
Yeah, boom.
And then they get bolo gunned in the face.
Yeah.
Because if you hit him in the head, it instantly knocks them out. And then you just stand there and just watch them all come at you because they're dumb. They're dumb as fuck. I found in this game, I tend to use vehicles a lot more than I game.
Well, it's funny
in the
you
first
mentioned...
game, I was a true porter. With my own 2 feet, I'd pack up my shit. But
funny you mention that. Sorry, in the chat, Mute jumps in and goes, "Yeah, the first game was a delivery simulator. Surprise, more combat in the sequel." I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions around Death Stranding at large is that it is a delivery simulator. I think in the first one, it certainly feels that way. But as you progress in the game, and people start making roads and highways, and as you unlock more vehicles, like I found similar to yourself that I started using vehicles more. However, I felt the terrain, because it wasn't as dense. The first was less dense. There were commonly stretches of like flatland, but this is a lot more rocky. It's a lot more unstable. Like you can duck and weave like your tri-bike through it all. But like if you were to have a big vehicle, you'd want to have those roads. So like for yourself, as you mentioned, you're now heading into a more vehicle use in Death Stranding 2. How do you feel that you're able to traverse the terrain easier, or are you seeing more in-world chiral constructions?
Oh, I'm seeing a little bit of construction. I've done a lot of constructions myself. So this isn't really spoilery, but in one section of the map in Australia, you can build a monorail. So I spent like 2 hours gathering all the resources. I built that motherfucker. And now I can just put my car on the monorail and get on with it and just fucking... It plays you. Like you're literally watching the monorail go. You can jump off mid monorail if you want to. You're like, peace, I'm out. So it takes like 5 minutes of watching the screen as you go along and do whatever it is you're doing. But what would get me is when you do your journey planner, it'll be like, this is going to take you 49 minutes if you walk, or 5 minutes in a car. And I'll look at my watch. I'm like, I've got 30 minutes before I have to turn this game off. I'm going to take the car because I want to get this done. So sometimes it's just a time constraint. Sometimes like in certain areas, I grabbed my ladders, I grabbed my climbing rope, and I just fucked off.
Yeah.
There's a lot more deliveries in this game that are like, these are too heavy, you have to use a fucking car. So there's a lot of that.
Saying that though, one of the joys that I experienced in Death Stranding, and I'm glad it's here in Death Stranding too, is those moments where you are over encumbered, but you can see the distribution center or whatever, and you're like, let's go. So like, you know, you find, like for me, I found like a big XL container that had to be dropped off at some place. It was on the way. It was like literally where I had to go. Like, brilliant. I can see where it is. Normally I wouldn't grab it because I'd be over encumbered, but it's right fucking there. Grab it. Ooh, duh. The slow lumbering walk that I take. And I, like I said, I was playing with Phoebe and Craig, like Phoebe, my partner, Craig, my mate. And they were like, I had a feeling that for them, this was horrible to watch. Because it's just me stopping, drinking from my canteen, going again, stopping, have a bit of a snooze, get up. But like for me, that is weirdly compelling gameplay. Like the reward I felt, which I can only imagine is in line with what the feeling of like Elden Ring is, that completion in a different way, is when I get down, I go, chunk, and I deliver it all, bump up 2.5 stars, fuck yes, like that feels good. Yeah, so like use that in a car, much better.
Well, because they brought the exosuits back from the first game, once I got the sprinting suit, I could run faster than the tri bike. So I'm like, I don't need a car anymore. I just fucking Terminator to it and just sprint down the highway. But obviously, there's the difficulties with vehicles is if you hit a BT, you're insta fucked. Whereas at least if you're in person, you kind of get the option to like shake off the little tar fucks and you can run for a little bit.
Yeah, like that vehicle is getting sunk into the tar pits. Like you
But
can't get
yeah,
it out.
and then everything falls out of the car because why not? And then you get fucked off like 50 meters back,
Oh, man, all
and
right. Speaking of shit falling off, it's a complete side tangent. So when I went to pick up my son the other day, so I went to visit him. I was explaining to his mum, my ex-wife, Millie, about Death Stranding 2. I'm like, this game's fucking insane. I'm like, I have to show you the opening sequence. So the sequence that I gushed over earlier, I showed it to her, and I'm like, it seems really bizarre. Like it must be, like you said, it delivers you this real sliver that you can walk along. It's probably the only reason that they can make, because they're intentionally funneling you. And I'm like, it's weird. Like you must be not be able to fall off. So the video that I pulled off YouTube to show her, coincidentally, Dan Allen Gaming, you may remember him from back in the day. He leaked all that Ubisoft stuff and got fucking shunned for it. Apparently, he still makes content, so no one ever really dies in the games media space. So in other words, just fuck shit up. No one really pays attention. He does it, and then I'm like, because that's the video I used. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He starts walking down the thing, then proceeds to stack it, and like arms in the air, fucking shit goes flying. So yeah, it turns out that will happen, and it happened early on. It was very funny for me. I'm yet to stack it that hard yet, but it was very funny to watch. So like, yeah, if you do stack it, shit goes airborne. Make sure you strap your fucking bag. All right, strap your bag. So Max, yeah, if your vehicle does get caught in that tar, whatever's in it, you don't have time to get it out. You're fucked. You're done. You're out. It's all gone.
Yeah. So there's upsides and downsides to using the vehicles. Then obviously, similar in the first game, you've got a certain like network coverage of like you can't have too much data on the network, otherwise you'll have to start deleting your old shit and all that stuff. So you don't want to be leaving cars lying around everywhere and whatnot. The new cast of characters they introduce are awesome. I won't go into anything because they're all spoiler heavy, but they are such a fantastic addition
But of
to the
course, you do get
cast.
the returning characters like obviously Sam and Fragile and Dead Man and Die Hardman. Who else is in there?
Hartman's back.
Hartman's back.
Some of the
Lockney?
standard people,
Lockney?
some of the standard people that were just like the people that
Dudes.
you spoke to at the distribution centers, some of those people have returned, which is cool.
Yeah, so
But
like
yeah.
those cast are back, which is lovely. So if you enjoyed them, of course, there's new cast, as we know that George Miller, creator of Mad Max, he's a you know he heads a he's a character in the game, which makes sense because I'm like, why the fuck? Like he's unapologetically Australian, but that's before we realized it was set in Australia. So, but yeah, a couple new characters as well. It's exciting times. Just once again demonstrating Kojima's love for actors that he can get into a game.
Yeah.
So I guess like without talking to individuals, how have like for me, we don't want to touch upon story too much because of spoilers, but so far, like already I am finding it incredibly compelling. I have had those emotional roller coasters a lot more early on than I had in the previous game, but it makes sense because they spent so I spent like what 50, 60 hours originally in Death Stranding, so I am connected to all these characters. To then now go here where they don't have to do all that setup anymore, where they're like, hey, you know who these people are. Here's your gut punches. So how's it been for you, Max? No
Been
spoilers,
rough.
obviously.
It's been rough.
Yeah.
It has been, yeah. There's been some moments where I've just been a hot mess.
See, this is what I find very interesting. So, like, I've talked on the record this show numerous times about how there are so many games that would just make me cry. Like, I am already an emotionally open person, but if you play games like The Last of Us or God of War, anything that really tackles that parent to child relationship, I'm already a mess. and I got fucked up pretty hard by Death Stranding 1, and I'm already being fucked up pretty hard by Death Stranding 2. Now, what I would encourage for those of you at home as well, if for any reason you haven't played Death Stranding 1 before you head into this, I would recommend you don't use the one that's on the PlayStation Australia YouTube channel because it's shit. Don't use the one that's in the game because it is also shit.
Watch one of the videos that's like at least an hour long.
There is one that is an hour and a half long and it explains everything in chronological order. Not the order you play it, the chronological order of the game. So there are things that you know that get covered early on, like later in the game, but they explain it earlier, then it puts everything in context. And so Phoebe and I watched it because we put 20-something hours into Death Stranding 1 on hopes of getting it done before Death Stranding 2. Weren't able to do so. So instead, we watched that video. And at the end of that video, I was weeping because there's all these little details that I forgot that came back. And, you know, there's particular shots that are really promising. And I say promising in terms of, like, I knew it was going to get an emotion out of me. You know, spoilers for Death Stranding 1, of course. There's a big shot at the end where Norman Reedus, Sam Porter Bridges, takes Lou out of the capsule
unit.
Out of the BB unit, and he's holding Lou, and then there's the BTs of other babies that have passed, whether they were BB units that were then disposed of. I've talked about this in the past, like as someone who myself and my partner Phoebe, we have sadly had quite a number of miscarriages over the last couple of years. We've tried to have another baby because I've got my son. That image was really, really powerful. And because I talked about this with you last time before, you know, like I'm like, hey, wonder how Death Stranding will feel now that I've got those experiences under my belt as well, other than just being a parent, which is the way I played the first game. It completely changed my experience of Death Stranding 1, like so much. It made it harder, but in a really nice way. Like for me, I find experiencing things like this through whether it be music or movies or games. Like if I can find another artistic medium or that can portray how I feel in a different way, it helps me understand it, but it helps me, you know, find a way to explain it to people. And whether it be God of War 2018 and now Death Stranding, like these are both games that have hit me very, very deeply. And heading into Death Stranding 2, I was aware that it was going to do the same. And even in the handful of hours that I've put in, I've already had that beat a couple times. Now, Max, you know, you said you're near triple my length in the game, and you politely message me and be like, oh, another gut punch. You don't tell me what it is. You just let me know. So the point of all that side tangent was I'm very quickly emotionally encapsulated by an experience, whether it be movie, TV, game, fuck a good TV ad you can get me these days. You're not as much. Like, you're not an emotional fucking nothing, but you very rarely do you crack. But for Death Stranding to get you to crack, it must be powerful.
I mean, when I played Death Stranding at the time, Ali was pregnant with Hadley.
Yeah.
So I had that going. And now, obviously, with Ollie being only just, you know, almost two now, it's still pretty close. So, yeah. There's been some moments where it's hit me right in the feels.
And absolutely, and like it's pretty much of a given heading into this game. If you've experienced Death Stranding 1, like it is a game about being a parent, and it's also incredibly pro-life. And
I mean, it's literally a story about the connections that you make with other people and how you interact.
Oh, that's a side tangent, by the way. I watched this video about like the politics of Death Stranding, and oh my god, because it made me, like, there were things that I was doing in the game that I didn't even realize, and also Death Stranding too, right? Because there is no currency, right? There's no financial currency. Like you can print whatever you want, as much as you want. You just got to bring the stuff, and even then, the places that you go will just give you stuff. So, with there being no currency in the end, the only currency, quote unquote, are likes, and that is just showing. So the reward And the money in this game to achieve what you need to do is simply kindness.
Yeah.
Which is fucking cool. It is so cool as a concept. And then on top of that, to have that continue into this next game, and we're now connecting the world, right? You know, it seems polar opposite to what the internet does and what it should do. But instead, we're going around the world just connecting people again. And granted, when we played this, it was pre-COVID. So the game changes completely, like in a COVID world. In a post-COVID world, well, COVID's still around, but in like a post-intensity pandemic time, Death Stranding... In a post-lockdown world, right? Like, it does feel different again.
Mm.
So yeah, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. At a certain point in the game, it's mentioned that because obviously you're using the Cooper to connect everyone to the chiral network, which is what we did to begin with the UCA. We're getting stuff brought across from the UCA to where we are now in Australia. And one of the big things that comes in and is referenced by one of the characters is weapons.
Yeah, we don't have guns in Australia.
They're like, guns is a very American thing. And now that we're connected to them via this network, there's fucking guns everywhere in Australia. Mm. I'm like, that's kind of funny.
And look, one of the only really good things that John Howard ever did was the gun removal here in Australia. So I'm glad that continued to a point in the Death Stranding world. There was another point that I was going to make. Oh, yeah. So now I haven't got to the point where this arrives. This was highlighted in a review by JB Hi-Fi. There is a soundtrack to this movie.
Dude, I'm 30 hours in. I still haven't heard it.
Okay, cool. So I had a theory. I haven't heard it yet, but I had a fucking theory. The theory to me was Hideo Kojima, he's always a big fan of blasting the things that he loves and adores across social media, right? And myself being a giant Sleep Token fan, my feed is fucking full of Sleep Token. Out of nowhere, this is a while ago when the album came out, here is Hideo Kojima playing the vinyl. And like, he's got video of him playing the vinyl for Even in Arcadia, particularly the second song, Emergence. He then tweets it again a little bit later. But just a clip, just a still from Spotify. I may have been 2 weeks ago, week before. I did highlight that that's similar to the beginning of that Low Roar song, that clocking kind of backwards click. Sounds a little bit like a record player, but would be a more prominent clock tick. That there was a song on the Sleep Token album, Gethsemane, which has a very, it's more of a record sound, but in the back of the mix, there's a little bit of that clicking sound. I'm like, holy shit. Maybe Sleep Token is going to be involved because like it makes sense. Like there's a way for it to make sense. However, I tweeted it. I deleted the tweet. I second guessed myself. I was like, nah, maybe not.
Okay, turns out,
Sleep Token's absolutely fucking in there. No spoilers.
Well, no spoiler. Well, I'm looking at a news article at the moment that's saying that they're not.
But
apparently, they've unlocked the full track list and they're not listed in the track listing.
Then why the fuck did they mention Sleep Token in that JB Hi-Fi review?
So this review quote: as we've said above, we may not have unlocked the full track list yet, but we are confident in saying that Sleep Token does not feature in the Death Stranding True soundtrack. We do, however, have a very good guess as to why so many people think they are. Because if you Google any permutation of Death Stranding 2 soundtrack, one of the top results is a Spotify playlist entitled Death Stranding 2 on the Beach, and there's Sleep Token songs in that.
All right, okay. Well, I thought I had a fucking breakthrough. I thought I
it'll be interesting.
A bit of zeitgeist. Now, granted, clearly I wasn't the only one. Like, mind you, none of my thoughts are original, it seems, but...
Yeah, it's very contentious online at the as to whether or not they are in there.
Well, hopefully we find it, because that'll just be one extra little reason to make Death Stranding 2 on the beach even better. But is there anything else we can touch upon that won't deliver a more...
Not that I can think of. Not that I can think of.
But yeah, look, I know I'll touch upon it earlier, but I'll touch upon it again. Like, that opening sequence was so good. And I remember turning around to Phoebe and her jaw was on the floor. She's like, how the fuck is this playable?
You haven't seen anything
yet. Oh, I'm very aware. Like, there's one clip that's in the trailer of, like, you're walking through and there's fucking spinning fucking little, like, pyro sparks. I don't know what the hell that's about yet.
They're fucked, you know.
It looks awesome. Minor detail that I've come to learn. Apparently there's no ray tracing in this game. But it's insane because the way light is used in Death Stranding 2 on the beach is remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. So yeah, so after fucking 30 minutes of first impressions, hopefully we'll be back in maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. To deliver our final full review of Death Stranding 2. It will be a big spoiler bastard. I can't wait. If we can touch all the details and probably cry as we're reliving, rediscussing these massive beats of Death Stranding 2 on the beach. But of course, as I mentioned, Death Stranding 2 on the beach is out now. It's on your PlayStation 5. One big thank you to the team over at PlayStation Australia for providing us the review code, allowing Maxi to experience this absolutely beautiful game. In complete hindsight, as I did with the first game, I am really bummed out that I didn't buy the collector's edition. Now, granted, I've not seen the part where I get to have a big kaiju, but I do want the statue and I do want the little keychain of the little of Doll Man.
I'm not there yet either.
Yeah, but I don't. Granted, I've got a mate that works at EB Games. You could drop it down to under 300, but then I still have to have 300 to buy the collector's edition, which I don't have. So
that's like a really shitty 3-day pass to WrestleMania.
That's like one ticket to fucking WWE Brawl in Perth. outside of that, Max, any other games?
Just standard Mario Kart with my kid. She's obsessed. I finally have access to all my other Switch games now that I've made my Switch 2 smooch
nice. Did you make that happen? Switch. Cool.
They went and smooched and now I have access to all my fucking virtual game cards so I can play all my other games. I have games that I forgot that I even had.
Ooh, like what?
Trials of Cold Steel 5.
Oh.
We got a code for it like way back when.
Did we?
And you're like, you have a Switch. You like turn-based RPGs. I'm like, yes, I do. And then I think it had like 3 hours of tutorials. I'm like, this is so confusing. I've jumped in on like the fifth game. this is crazy.
But very similar to Final Fantasy, excuse me. They're not in like sequential order. Doesn't really matter.
Anyway. Your story wise, but game mechanic wise.
Oh, absolutely. They're just stacked on what you've learned in the previous ones, I imagine.
Yeah. So, but yeah, other than just doing the Mario Kart worlds with Hadley, she's now upgraded to 100cc races, which is cool.
Nice, that's good. That's a good win.
Other than that, nothing really.
Yeah. There's another game that we can't talk about yet that we've had access to. I've dicked about with a little bit, but the only other game that I've really spent time with is weirdly enough Gas Station Simulator. So, in the process of Phoebe and I were playing, it is not Tony Hawk Mute. If it was, I would be way more excited. What we're playing is cool, but it's not Tony Hawk. Actually, we don't even think we have a connection at Activision anymore.
I bought Tony Hawk last time.
Yeah, since they got picked up by Microsoft, Microsoft, we dropped off their list ages ago because it's PlayStation. So
everything's an Xbox now. We should try and get back on.
Not a bad idea.
They're doing lots of cool shit these days.
Yeah, so because Phoebe and I kind of had this with this agreement that like we'll play Death Stranding 2 together. I'm being nice and polite, and I'm respecting that deal, right? You know, we don't want no repeated experience. So instead, like, so she had the other day over the weekend. She's like, I'm gonna have a nap. I'm like, no worries. Like, I won't play while you're doing that. I'll go down to the computer. So I've come down here, and I'm like, well, what can I play that's tickling my interest? I played a little bit of Elder Scrolls Online. Still enjoying it. Still loving it. I got a review code for a DLC for Drug Dealer Simulator 2, so I'll be fucking around with that as well. They've added a casino on the island. Awesome. Fuck yeah. And then I was like, oh, you know what got an update recently? They called it the fuel nominal update. Was Gas Station Simulator. I'm like, all right, I'll fuck with this. I haven't fucked with this in a while. Started a new game. Oh my God. That game is so dangerous to me. There is something about it. It is so beautifully simple. And I give a shit about having a gas station, apparently. I put like 8 hours in that fuck over the last like 3 days. Which I know is not a lot. For me, it is. And like, I am completely committed into that game again. And the beauty of it is now I'm, because it's been so long since I've played it, and I've played a lot of it on the PlayStation, which is behind in many of the updates, I now have a drive-in theater. There's a car wash, which I never really fucked with. I can now like do little simple tasks. Like I can delegate multiple things to my employees. I can change the price of my fuel. There's a lot of like just so many quality of life experiences, just like just changing it, making it such a better experience. I'm thoroughly enjoying it, absolutely loving it. But we're already an hour in though, and we probably should get into the news. So this section is what we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Now, Max has done some fun things this week. Normally, we collate everything into a Word doc, and he sends it through to me. Now, for whatever reason, as part of Microsoft 365, they've now integrated Copilot into fucking everything. So Max goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to run it through. I'm going to run the doc through
Copilot. I'm going to run through Copilot. I'm going to have it spit out some dot points for me to be more concise, and we'll see how we go.
What we had before was just fine. Just saying.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, fix it. Fuck it up. Break it.
That is the rules AI.
The first one I have titled Used and Abused. So a Dutch class action lawsuit is currently accusing Sony of abusing its market dominance in the console space. Filed by Stichting Masterschade and Consument, representing 1.7 million Dutch PlayStation users, they are claiming Sony are forcing players into a digital-only ecosystem on the PlayStation 5, restricting software purchases to the PlayStation Store. While disc-based PlayStation 5 options still exist, consumers feel nudged towards digital-only consoles. Research has shown digital games cost on average 47% more than their physical counterparts, despite having a lower distribution cost. Sony's large market share, 80% of Dutch console owners, allegedly limits competition and developer freedom. The lawsuit is seeking up to 435 million euros or 508 million freedom bucks in damages. First hearing is scheduled this month. The critics are skeptical of the suit's chances due to physical games still being widely available.
Now, I'll let you go first because I spent a whole lot of time talking about Death Stranding. My voice is only so tolerable.
I'm positive this has happened before. I think it happened in the UK.
It absolutely has happened before.
I don't think it got anywhere from memory. You can still buy physical games. Yep. Some are digital only, sure. But you still have the option to buy physical media. You can still go out and buy a disc drive for your digital only consoles. Now, again, we are not the target data for this. We are in a very privileged position where we only do. Very rarely do I need to get up and put a disc in my console these days. But as someone who's buying Switch cartridges, they're fucking expensive, and they're just as expensive digitally.
So this is where it's interesting from where I sit, right? Now, hey, what's up, Jamie? How you doing? Good effort on that name. I forget what you said.
I still think digital games should be cheaper than what their physical counterparts are. It's crazy that... Yeah. I mean, you obviously still have an overhead to run your servers and hosting and all that shit, but as you are not in a physical store, you are not printing the physical media, you're not shipping the discs, you are not doing all that other bullshit that is related with having a physical thing. It is crazy that digital is just as expensive.
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons, I think, why this is the case. So, sadly, when they started to introduce these digital libraries with the PSN and the Xbox Live, there was a conscious effort to not undercut the physical spaces because they didn't want to, like, obliterate their physical market because not everyone was ready for digital. Granted, it's been like 15 years since then. The prevalence of digital distribution is way, way, way higher. However, not doing that at the initial inception, it has set up the position that we are in now. Because these companies have learned that we will pay full price, if not more, for digital versions of these experiences. So what would have been an opportunity for them to reduce the price, because I agree with you, they should be cheaper because there is no physical distribution, there is no digital printing, sorry, there is no physical printing, there is no discs, there is no cases, there is no, now granted, cases are getting less and less ever. Even the discs, they're putting less and less on them as we progress. However, if they eliminated that at the beginning and said, fuck EB Games, fuck GameStop, who cares? They're a dying business model anyway, which they fucking are. Then they could have actively made a decision early on to reduce some of that cost. So where would we be at now? We'd be in a better space. And I think these prices would be reasonable. However, it is an industry, it is a business. And as we've come to learn in the late stage capitalism, we'll charge it, people will pay it. So we'll keep charging it. Talked about it earlier at the beginning of the show. Why the WWE ticket prices are so fucking expensive is because people will pay them. They'll find a way. Randy Pitchford said it.
Find a way. I think the only medium that doesn't exist is books. I swear I can buy a physical book cheaper than I can buy a fucking ebook.
Yeah, well, because in the chat, Jamie from Pario does jump in and says, same concept for film, digital rentals for $20. That's fucked. I have never paid for a digital rental because it's a dumb concept. It is dumb.
My parents have digital rented stuff on my Amazon a few times. I'm like, it's $5.99 to rent the movie or $8.99 to own. Why not just spend the fucking $3 and just own it forever?
Because like as the way I said, yeah, it's digital, right? It's nothing. It's fucking nothing. So why am I paying money to rent something that is fucking nothing? And then I have a time pressure on it. Isn't the whole point of these streaming services that we've encapsulated so that we don't have time pressure, that if we want to watch a movie over 3 days, we could? Like, isn't that the benefit of digital? But then in the chat, you goes, Jamie jumps in and goes, pay the little bit extra to, quote, own a copy. You don't own it. Never do. We don't own shit anymore. This is, once again, late-stage capitalism. Isn't it rad? We don't own fucking shit. However, it's apparently still theft if we pirate stuff. But we don't own it. But it's theft. So in terms of this could have been rectified had they had the balls to fuck up EB Games and GameStop back in the day, which they should have, because fuck them. They are shells of their former selves as companies. They are gross. Disgusting. This case is going nowhere. Because as you said, physical copies are still available. This is like, would I agree that they're, you know, companies like, actually, look at Xbox as an example. And why aren't they being fucking sued? They are intentionally funneling everyone onto Game Pass. So you neither own the game at all, physically or digitally, you're still forking out stacks of money. That should be the conversation. That is strangled, like that. Most games don't even publish physically on Xbox anymore because there's no money in it. That is worse than this. Now, PlayStation, granted, as the primary console at this point, yeah, they should be considerate of these things. But it makes sense. They're going to fucking push it digitally too. Collector's editions, outside, like the physical ones, they come with a code now. You have digital-only, exclusive editions and shit.
Except for Borderlands 4, which has a collector's edition that doesn't come with the game.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. Red Dead Redemption 2 did the same thing. I ain't mad about it. I was going to buy the game anyway. Made the collector's edition cheaper, in theory. Probably didn't. I don't mind. Because then they don't have to make, you know, console. Like, right now, in the situation that we are in, digital. So PC, no one buys physical shit for PC, as outside of collectors. No one buys physical for Xbox anymore, period. If you're lucky, most people that buy physical would buy PlayStation. So rather than go, all right, we're going to need 400,000 copies of PS5 digital collector's edition, sorry, physical collector's edition, 35 Xboxes and 10 PCs. Let's just make it all People can buy it whatever fucking platform they're on, doesn't matter. Not buy the game. They can buy it digital, they can buy it physical, who cares? Like, that is the best way to go about it from a collector's edition standpoint. But does it, but you know, it does agree with this point though. They are funneling you to buy, you know. They're just making two transactions instead of one. And I can assure you that collector's edition is not $100+ cheaper because you have to buy the game over there. Not at all. Capitalism is an asshole. But I can't live without it. It is important to everything that I like to do. Next up, Max. Now, because you broke this into fucking bullshit dot points by Copilot, I'll see how I go. This one's called We're Not an Xbox. So this week, Sony has released more continued to release information around its strategy when it comes to first-party titles and PS Plus, and says that it will continue to not release them at launch in order to preserve the value of the title. So unlike Xbox Game Pass, when compared to Microsoft, which includes major releases on day one, Sony sees this model as, quote, unsustainable, and they are correct. The U.S. analysis Circana reports the stagnation in subscription growth and therefore has had a negative impact on Xbox game sales. So in short, apparently in the last couple of years, in the year, 2 years maybe, total Xbox Game Pass subscriptions went up, I think it was about a recorded 1 million. Now, Xbox haven't actively shared their data in quite some time. We have no idea how many fucking Xbox consoles are being bought because they've not reported them in about 6 years, I want to say. It might be a bit sooner than that because they would have released numbers around Series X and Series S. Probably within the last 4 years, minimum. So yes, it is absolutely negatively impacting sales. Microsoft is Microsoft is then in turn shifting their opinion, their focus, their delivery method, by releasing titles on all platforms, including the upcoming Gears of War Reloaded, which is coming to PS5 next month or August. I think it's August, July or August.
Yep, August.
However, Nick Maguire confirms Sony will continue to be launching its first party games to around 12 to 18 months on PC post their initial release. Great way to look at it. But saying that though, Sony is still actively finding ways to improve their PS Plus service with things like Extra and Premium, with the quality third-party releases like Blueprints, which came out on day one, as well as a couple other games. There was the recent FBC Firebreak, which wasn't very good, in my experience. But on top of that, quote, the 4 or 5 day one indie games approach isn't fixed, however, as Sony is open to more depending on the opportunities that come up their way. Now, to justify their stance, Sony has argued its strategy is working well, as gamers prefer owning specific titles over subscriptions to a vast catalog, which I agree with. I am one of those consumers. The difference is the access we have is very different. But of course, gaming is seen as an active experience, unlike music or TV. So Sony chooses to cater to focus selective play habits that mirror that behavior. Max, I've made my opinion very well known about Game Pass. Where are you at?
I do love me some Game Pass. From a consumer standpoint, as a value for money, Games Pass does kind of is better than what, especially here in Australia, is better than what Sony's offering us in Premium and Extra. Yeah, well, Deluxe here, yeah. I still don't know why we can't have the fucking PS3 streamed games. Like, we have good internet now. Don't be shit. let us use them. We pay more than what everyone else pays for their deluxe and or for their premium, and we're getting a lesser tier of stuff. It totally makes sense that because everyone's buying into Games Pass, no one's buying the actual games themselves. Mm-hmm. Games do tend to stay on the service long enough for you to complete them, and once you've completed them, you're not going to buy them once they get removed from the service. Unless it's obviously a live service title. So it makes sense.
Yeah, look, I've discussed before that I like Game Pass as a service. I think it's really great from a customer-facing perspective. Like, for my desire to play Call of Duty but not buy Call of Duty, it was really good. I enjoyed it. I've most definitely paid enough of the subscription to have paid for Call of Duty, so that's dumb. But, yeah, from a consumer-facing standpoint, it's a great idea. However, we're seeing it. It's absolutely hollowed out Xbox. It is directly damaging the games industry at large. It, granted, in a lot of ways, it has changed the gaming industry for better or worse. We don't quite know yet. I think we're yet to really see what the full extent of its impact would be, like even in a positive space, right? So whether the idea of, you know, with Xbox choosing to no longer be a sole, like yeah, they've got the consoles, but they're distributing their stuff everywhere. That old market of what PlayStation runs on, which is the console exclusives and so on, is fading away fast. Do I have an issue with Microsoft's attitude of, well, we couldn't beat them, so let's fucking destroy everything? Is an interesting decision to have made. And I do believe it will have negative impact on the long term. But I'm very glad and very appreciative in a weird way, probably a weird way to use that word, in PlayStation's decision to keep it the way it is. A lot of it is because I'm old and I'm set in my ways and I like it. I do believe it is better for the industry, and I want this industry to continue to grow and be amazing. I've dedicated, what am I now, 36. I started playing like 27, 28 years of my life playing games, and the better part of 11 years covering games as games media. I adore this industry. I love this industry. Like I have the pleasure and symbols tattooed on my arm for a reason, right? It's because gaming is such a big part of who I am and what I love and how I enjoy this world. And unlike most people that play games or experience games, they see it differently. What's confused face about?
Oh, I've got my phone linked to my computer. Mm. So I got a text message from what appears to be a Belgian number.
Choice.
Asking me, how's Cooper doing lately?
Your Cooper.
Your master. Exactly. Cooper. Correct.
Odd. Yeah, so for me, granted, because of the nature of the way I think and the way we do things like this show, we look at the industry very, very differently. So I understand that my love for games, my appreciation, my fondness towards them is a little different compared to the average person who just likes to play like Fortnite or Call of Duty. So I look at it differently, I care about it differently. And I do truly believe that things like this will have a very staggeringly dangerous impact on the space. But in the same breath, like, maybe the future of the industry is handheld again. Maybe it's the Steam Decks, this fucking ROG ally that Xbox have partnered with. You know, there's reason to believe that PlayStation and Sony are actively R&Ding what would become PlayStation 6 or a portable PS5 in some capacity. It makes sense. But yeah, I'm so glad they're sticking to their guns and not changing anything, which is great.
Alrighty, I will do the quick bits and the drop, essentially. So the quick bits, Bandai Namco is running a showcase this Thursday morning, bright and early at 5 a.m. for us here in Australia. Square Enix are, quote, aware of Clairobscur's success as a more traditional turn-based RPG. Hopefully that leads to Final Fantasy XVII going back to being a fucking turn-based RPG.
I think they're certainly interested in it. Now, yeah. Max, Bandai Namco Showcase is the most Max fucking thing to ever happen.
Yeah, so they have announced... Is there anything they happening? They have announced what we're going to get a look at. So we're probably going to see the new My Hero Academia game, which I have no interest in. Code Vein 2, which was shown off at Summer Games Fest. Blood of the Dawnwalker, which is from ex-Witcher dudes. Death Note, Killer Within, Everybody's Golf, Hot Shots, Little Nightmares 3, which will be cool, Patapon 1 and 2 Replay, the game that I keep referring to as Pac-Man Souls, Shadow Labyrinth, Super Robot Wars Y, and some more Tekken 8 stuff.
So look, there is some things there that are a little bit of everyone. Like, where is it? Hang on, let me pull the list up. I did see it a second ago. Where'd it go? There it is. Obviously, Little Nightmares 3 I'd be keen for. Everybody's Golf, super keen. Patapon, fuck yeah. Tekken 8, yeah, sweet, why not? Everything else can get... So is there anything that like sings to you the most out of that, Max?
Code Vein and Shadow Labyrinth.
Yeah, yeah. Shadow Labyrinth.
And Shadow Labyrinth drops real soon from memory too.
Maybe we'll get more information. Excuse me, out of said showcase. Cool.
July 18th. So it comes out just over 2 weeks after the...
Real soon. But let's get into the games that are coming out this week. Now, of course, if you've got PS Plus Essential, you'll have access to the following. That is Diablo 4, PS5, PS4. I'm sure, Max, endorse that game pretty hard.
Oh, I haven't played this in Season 3, and Season 9's about to start.
Dear God, that went quick. But also, you did quite love it. The King of Fighters 15, PS5, PS4, and then Jusant, PS5. Now, I remember that game being interesting. I remember wanting to play it, but I forget what it was about.
They're coming out on the 1st of July.
Which is today at time of release. That's exciting for you. But on the 30th of June, which is today at time of recording, you get 9 Years of Shadows on PS5, PS4, Biped 2, PS5, PS4, Bittersweet Birthday, PS5, Chip and Claws versus the Brainoids, PS5, Esophagize, PS5, PS4, Warside, PS5, PS4. On the 1st of July, you get Angerfoot, PS5, IREM Collection Volume 3, No Heroes Here 2, Dead, 2nd of July, Deed of Darkness, and the 3rd of July, Tohu Artificial Dream in Arcadia. Not the Arcadia, the Sleep Token highlights. And now that I think about it, hang on, let me have a quick look. Where is it? Where's the email? Here it is. Cool. Beautiful. All right, done. Sorry, I had to check something. But yeah, there you go. That's the end of the show.
What's coming?
They're all the games that are coming available to you. You should play them, maybe. It's up to you.
Digital, physical?
Yeah.
I guarantee half of these are probably not getting physical releases.
I'm pretty confident. yes, I don't see any of them having any physical release because that's insane. But anyways, that does bring us to the end of the show. Big thank you for everyone for joining us once again. We do apologize for the week off, but we are back and hopefully we sound better than before, or as equally good as before.
Are we at like 400 yet? Is it like 2 weeks away?
We are. Oh, shit. What are we? Hang on. Let me have a look. This will be 398.
So 2 weeks away.
So 2 weeks. And let's have a look. Yep. This would be episode 398. So two more weeks. We will be at episode 400. That is fucked. And I'm so happy.
Yeah, it's funny because I think you talked about it when we were discussing Death Stranding 2. I think I joined up just as Death Stranding launched.
So yeah, Death Stranding launched in the October of 2019. No, November of 2019, I should say. You joined the fray in the October of 2019.
Mm.
So it was your first big game with us.
What a banger of a game.
Yeah, and here we are. X amount of years later.
Yeah. How come no one else can fucking release another title within 4 years?
Well, it's because Kojima didn't get put onto bullshit fucking games as a service. But that's a different conversation. Max, you know how this works. Oh, no, throw in first. If you want to throw in, and then we can
fuck. Oh, I was just going to point out that Kojima is working on...
Say it again, same sorry.
Time. Kojima is working on multiple things at the same time.
Well, yeah, there's Pheasant and...
Whatever the Xbox game is.
Yeah, they're fucking OD, it was called.
All
right, now you can do your outro. Let's get out of here.
Everybody, you know the drill. This PlayStation conversation happens every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast on Spotify and 9 a.m. on as YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, X, all of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist. We can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you are listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe to the comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players. Should we do anything like massive for 400? Like rebrand? I'm not going to rebrand. I don't have that much time to think about it. Maybe we'll jump into TikTok. We've talked about it a bunch of times. Maybe this will, we'll start streaming to TikTok. We need someone who will cut all our shit for us. So they can cut all of the dumb shit we say into little. And running it through AI is really expensive.
So everything.
No, if we got it, if we can stream to TikTok, that's fine. If I've got the plugin that'll like arrange us in a vertical fashion. But then if we're gonna make clips and shit, I don't have the edit for that. Like, you were gonna do it and you fucking didn't.
Yeah, my hard drive died with all of my video editing software.
And also it's not very fun, it's quite boring to do, so there's that as well. Alright, see you next week.
Oh, fuck.